Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Man, I am excited today because I hear that the topics on the show were picked at random draw, like an MLS allocation pick. I'm excited.
How excited are you?
I'm so excited that I could maybe tune in to a New England Revolution game for about 5 minutes next week.
All right, well,
seven if there's good beer, but you know.
Yeah, seven if there's good beer. Yeah. Well, I actually put some time and thought into producing this week's podcast. So, no, it was not a random draw. And
You topic snob.
Yeah, so let's just get into the rundown of what the listeners out there can look forward to this week, Corey. We're going to just hit on some quick few highlights for each of us from the EPL weekend. Second, we are going to talk about some ice bucket banter.
Uh-oh.
Third, the pending return of Mario Balotelli to the Premier League. Fourth is a mystery topic, another outside-the-box discussion that will thrill the audience everywhere. And lastly, we are going to talk about the news that broke late this week about Tim Howard. So, with that in mind, are you ready to rock and roll on this edition of the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, sir?
Yeah, as long as Tower's not going to Cambodia.
All right, yes. All right, first, before we get going, let's just a lot of new people picking up on the show, as we could tell from the download numbers. Do remember, twodaftyanks.com is your number one source, but we are also in all kinds of things, Corey. You could download the show on your iPhone with the iTunes. We're on there. So just search for Two Daft Yanks. You'll find it. Stitcher Radio on your smartphone app, on Android devices, as well as TuneIn Radio. And you know what, Corey? You know what would be nice? Can you implore the people, if you take the time, we get your messages on email and on the website and on Twitter at Two Daft Yanks. If you enjoy the show, take the 30 seconds and give us a review on whatever platform you listen to, iTunes, TuneIn. The more people who review the show, the higher up the list we go, and the more people that will hear the gospel of the soccer that we talk about. Is that not right?
Yeah, because I'm trying to win the Euro Snob Aficionado of the Year. So, that's not going to happen unless people start listening more. But
all right. So do it, not for me, do it for Corey.
Yeah. My ego needs the boost.
Okay. So, all right. So
actually, it doesn't.
Yeah. So we have just wrapped up the second weekend of EPL play, and now, granted, we do have this is Sunday night, so we do have the big bash of one versus two from the table last year, Manchester City versus Liverpool. But I don't really care what happens there. But for the weekend so far, sir, what was one observation, one takeaway that you take away from league action this weekend?
Oh, man, you take away when I just had that excellent pizza, too. You're getting me hungry again. My takeaway is I think I'm already sick of the pundits talking about the freaking 3-5-2 and how it doesn't work in this with these players in this system and blah, 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 and the fullbacks are too deep and a yada, 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 and, all of that. So, yeah, I think my takeaway is I'm already sick of the 3-5-2 talk a little. So.
Well, I have bad news for you.
Yeah, I know.
Because my takeaway from the weekend is also related to the 3-5-2.
Yeah.
And how Manchester United is still having their growing pains in trying to implement that system under Louis van Gaal. And they drew 1-1 today with Sunderland at the Stadium of Light.
And did you happen to see his comment before the match? It was pretty...
No, I heard people talking about it, but I missed it. So can you please enlighten me?
It was your typical Louis Van Gaal moment where the announcer asked him, you said last week your confidence was crushed, or whatever adjective he used. How is it going this week? And, of course, Van Gaal kind of shoots him a look, and in his Dutch accent goes, I did not say I was... My confidence was crushed. I meant the players. So I just thought it was pretty funny because I had to tweet, well, nobody thought your confidence was personally crushed, Louis, because that's impossible. So anyway, it was just pretty funny because it was your, you know, Louis Van Gaal thinks he's God moment kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But my takeaway from the weekend is, and then we talked about this on the last episode, and just to get back quickly to LVG there. Yeah, I did see a lot of people saying, man, this guy gives great interviews. We told you. We told you this was going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, for one, Harry Redknapp, he basically did not give good interviews because he got slapped around today for nothing. And so my takeaway from the weekend is Harry's expertise in the 3-5-2 lasted all of three halves. Before he had to pull out of it. He had to pull out of it and go to a straight 4-4-2 after falling down to Spurs at White Hart Lane in his return to White Hart Lane after being sacked as Tottenham manager.
Yeah, QPR was pretty awful today. I mean, and you know, obviously not to take anything away from y'all because y'all did play well, but man, QPR looked bad. And I had to tweet along the lines of what you were saying about Harry that, oh, you've played the 3-5-2 a lot in the past, Harry? Well, it doesn't freaking look like it because y'all look all over the place.
Mm-hmm. And I actually have one tidbit from that match, which just blows my mind. Now, remember last week in Swansea's victory over Manchester United at Old Trafford, we said that in the build-up to their first goal, they completed 29 passes,
mm-hmm.
which was the longest of any... you know, consecutive passing streak leading to a goal of all of last season. Well, today, in the Spurs match, I don't remember which goal, but Chadli scored two goals. One of the Chadli goals, this will show you how bad QPR was today. Spurs had 48 passes leading to a goal. 48.
Yeah, that's...
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's... Once you get into the 20s is a lot. So yeah, once you get into the 40s, that's a pretty epic move. But yeah, 40. QPR was so bad, Joey Barton couldn't even be bothered to kick anybody today. I was very disappointed.
And I must give you credit. I'll give you credit for one of the funniest tweets of the day. So please tell me what you as a public service announcement, what do you recommend that people do this night to protect their finances?
Yeah, if any of you people do a lot of online banking with any financial institutions, you should update your passwords because Ari Redknapp's going to be on the hunt for some money because you know he's going to want to buy some players after today, regardless of the system he's using. But yeah, so update your financial passwords. Because Ari financial banker Redknapp is going to be on the prowl for some cash in the coming week. Yeah. I'm just saying one day I'm going to laugh when it's revealed that one of the Russian hacking syndicates is actually linked to Harry Redknapp.
That could be possible.
Yeah. He spends a lot of money is the point.
All right, so you... have inadvertently, without even knowing what this next topic is completely, by mentioning Russian syndicates,
yeah,
we're going to talk about some ice bucket banter.
Uh-oh.
Now, if you're on social media, you'll know of this ice bucket challenge, which is just taken off like a fire, a wildfire. And it's for a great cause. It's to raise money and raise awareness for ALS, which is just an incredibly... you know, destroying disease of the human body, and it impacts more people than you actually think it does. And so, you know, the idea of this, and you've all seen this, you dump a bucket of freezing cold water on yourself And that kind of, you know, mimics the effects of what the disease does. And then you're supposed to donate some money to the cause and then challenge somebody else to do it, right?
Yes, that's what
I've been told. You have seen this.
Okay. Yes.
So yesterday was an ice bucket challenge by one AVB, Andre Villas-Boas.
Oh, I didn't even see this.
Who is now the manager at Zenit, for those of you who do not know. And so after, I think he actually did it before, but his challenges, and this is great, this is gets to the banter, the people he challenged to the ice bucket challenge was Roman Abramovich and Daniel Levy. Isn't that pretty funny?
Yeah, no, I completely missed that. That is pretty funny.
AVB. Going after some great banter with the two chairmen who fired him, and both of them mid-season, by the way, too.
Yeah, no, you gotta respect the trolling effort, because yeah, I mean that's how you do it. You know, take somebody down that's big and you know that may have wronged you and might actually ignore you, which then you know puts unwanted pressure on them because they may be ignoring you not because of the cause, but just personally, but. You know, it gives the perception of ignoring the cause. So, well done, AVB.
Yeah, so now it gets better. So today, after the Tottenham win, in the Tottenham dressing room, Daniel Levy did take his challenge.
Oh, did he?
Did it.
Oh, and well, fair play to him.
And he did it. And, you know, most people, you know, strip down to like a swimming suit or something.
Oh, please tell me he stayed in his suit.
Full suit.
Yeah.
Full suit.
Done,
so.
Well done to you too, Levy.
So I will post that with the blog post on this link of Daniel Levy taking the ice bucket challenge in his full suit, which is I've never seen anybody do that. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, and I caught a little flack on my personal Facebook thread for the ALS stuff, and like I told somebody, I'll donate, but I won't do the challenge because I actually had to take a cold shower for a few days in my old apartment up here in Alaska in the spring when the hot water heater went out, and yeah, I'm not doing that again.
Now, no word if Abramovich has done his challenge. He may have, it's just I haven't seen it. So be on the lookout to see if he's man enough. But
well, I'm sure he's got a Chelsea U21 player that'll force to do it in his stead.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Yeah. But here's another funny thing. So Levy took the
do the challenger go on loan.
So Levy took the banter to another level, and he in his, you know, he did the challenge. So then you're able to challenge someone else to take the challenge, and guess who he picked?
Ooh, I'm gonna guess either Arsene Wenger or Sepp Blatter.
No, Real Madrid chairman Florentino Perez.
Oh, nice.
He said, I'm going to challenge someone who owes this club a lot of gratitude. That's what he said, something to that effect, and challenged Perez after, you know, the transfers of Gareth Bale and Luka Modric to Real Madrid. So there we go. So the ice bucket, I'm kind of sick of it as well, like you are. But it really is raising tons of money for a cause that we hope that we can, you know, someday find a cure for. So I think it's great.
Yeah, because let me clarify. I'm sick of the challenge, not the cause. It's just a lot of people post their videos and it comes off more as look at me than the actual charity donation thing. That's what I'm sick of.
Yeah.
So, anyhow.
Very good. And we have not been challenged yet because, you know, we're just low-level podcasters.
Well, now I was going to be challenged by one of my cousins, but that's what I told him that, you know, I'll just donate. I won't do the challenge.
Yeah.
So.
All right, let's roll on here.
So, yeah, I guess you could say I'm a charity snob, too. Yes. Snobness never ends.
And the news just keeps on. I mean, we had some crazy news on the field, off the field. And we have just 1 week, sir, until the transfer window. As Jim White would say on Sky Sports, until the transfer window slams shut, right? That's the adjective that they use.
Slam shut. Put away your checkbook unless you've got the hacking codes like Harry.
How come the transfer window doesn't just get, you know, softly closed or gently, you know, shut?
Because they're probably like my upstairs neighbor who can't close a door or a window without slamming it.
But anyway, so. It hasn't been announced yet for whatever reason, but we've seen him there at the club you know, interacting with fans, and it the transfer of Mario Balotelli from AC Milan to Liverpool looks like it will be announced in the next few days, at least. So let's just talk about that move, both on and off the field. And so I'm trying to figure out what Liverpool is thinking here. Do you know they're like, do you think that maybe Brendan Rodgers or John Henry, or I don't know who their sporting director is these days. I know it was Camoli for a while. I don't think he's still there.
Yeah, no, they ran him off.
Okay, but do you think they're like, you know what? You know, things are pretty calm here since Suarez left. So, you know, let's try to find the most complete nutter nut job person we could find who's available on transfer just to liven things up here at Anfield.
Yeah, because I don't get this move at all in terms of tactics, because they have enough wingers coming through that, you know, they can play somebody in Suarez's place when, you know, when they – I mean, granted, Suarez always played through the center, but, you know, he and Sturridge used to kind of swap places out, you know, that wide forward kind of thing. But, you know, they got Sterling, they got that other guy that they just signed, Markovic, and other players that are jumping – names are jumping out of my head at the moment. So
– continue.
Coutinho plays a little more the number 10, though. But, yeah, so he's
– Lambert.
Yeah, so they got Lambert to come off the bench that's going to play behind Sturridge. So I'm not sure where Balotelli is going to play unless they're going to move Sturridge back out wide and, you know, send Markovic or that other young guy they got, Jordan Ibe or Ibe, however you say his name, on loan. So, yeah, I don't know. I think Liverpool personally got themselves into a situation, kind of what happened with y'all last year, where you make a big signing and you just feel like you have to spend all of it. Otherwise, your fans, you know, wrongly take the impression that you're, you know, just cashing in and sitting on the money when, like I said, tactically speaking, I don't necessarily think they needed Balotelli. I mean, he's not going to be as quite of a nutter as Suarez because, you know, Balotelli's antics tend to be a little more on the childish nature and not the actual, you know, borderline psychotic nature, like biting people, which it still baffles me that people don't see the seriousness of those kind of acts. So I just think it's a situation where Liverpool just, you know, they got all the money and they felt they needed to spend it because – as we'll probably get into in a minute, a lot of people go on and on about Balotelli such a natural goal scorer, and he doesn't really score that many goals as many people think, or as many people seem to think he does.
Yeah, no, I think that's a valid point you make there in terms of how does he fit in tactically, and that was going to be my next question for you. But you also make a good point into – where Balotelli, you know, he does a lot of stupid things because of the youthfulness and his background. I think a lot of people, maybe they don't know this, and I didn't really know this until recently, but, you know, he was abandoned by his family at a very young age.
So, yeah, who then showed up later to cash in when he got famous.
Yeah, so, and that's a terrible thing just, you know, psychologically for someone to go through. So not that it's an excuse, but it's definitely a factor. And I'm looking at Twitter here, and they have like all the things that he's done, but he's done some good things, you know, like there's reports where he was at a gas station filling up his car, and then he stuck around for like an extra hour filling up anybody who showed up, you know, to pay for their bill to fill up the gas in their car. Same thing, he'll show up to restaurants and, you know, buy a round of beer for everybody. So, I mean, it's good and bad, you know. I mean, what, he burnt down his house, or he started a fire in his house with some fireworks? There's, you know, just stuff like that. But, yeah, I think it's just a weird move to where if you're a club who's trying to seek stability, I'm not sure if Mario Balotelli is the guy you really want to bring in.
Yeah, well, it's the, you know, to use the cliche, it's the football manager move that, you know, you buy the big name because he's a big name, and you just squeeze him into the lineup and you win games, you think you win games because he's got a lot of natural talent, which he does, But, and again, you know, Rodgers has shown he can be astute tactically at times, and maybe he'll find a way to fit him in. But I just think it's just a superfluous type of move, in my opinion, and that it's a move that I don't necessarily think Liverpool needed to make. Now, granted, they did get him at a fairly cheap price compared to, you know, some of the names that are going around, or, you know, for some of the prices of, you know, a lot of the names that are going around these days. But again, I just, you know, I hate to sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but it just seems like a superfluous type of move on Liverpool's part.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think the figure that's being floated out there is 15 or 16 million pounds. Or is it euros? I can never get
that. I believe it was pounds, the one I saw.
Okay. So you're talking there, that's a good $21 million.
Yeah, and considering Angel de Maria might go for 75 million euros, that's a freaking bargain. But
yeah, and like so I said, I'm looking at Balotelli's career record here. He's got 66 league goals and 156 appearances. And to a lot of people's surprise, Corey, if you're looking at this, and this is a point that I know you want to make, is that they think of this guy as, you know, just this lethal goal scorer, but in the actual hood is he's only scored in double figures in the league anyway, just league totals alone, 3 years in his career, with 13, 12, and 14, with last year being 13-14 season with AC Milan being his highest scoring season ever with 14 goals and 6 assists.
Yeah, and six of those were from the penalty spot, too. So,
oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and that's because I just know that because I watch, you know, Milan's one of the teams that I follow, you know, just for player development stuff. But, yeah, because that's my issue with Balotelli is that he's, you know, the term overseas mercurial gets used a lot, but when it comes to a player like Balotelli, it actually is fitting. Because yeah, when he wants to play, he's really, really good. The problem is getting him to play and getting him to be interested in matches that don't really mean anything. And I know a lot of people these days like to bash on people like Olivier Giroud for not being a big game goal scorer, and a lot of players are like that. You know, Suarez didn't actually score a lot of goals in big games last year either. And personally, I think that's an overrated. It's an overrated thing that gets thrown at a lot of players as excuses for people not coming up with actual evidence to not like a player, so they fall back on that excuse because, you know, it's technically an excuse that could be used for a lot of players over the years. You know, I mean, it was once levied at Thierry Henry, for Christ's sake. But in Balotelli's case, even though he scores big goals, he goes anonymous in a lot of games. And there was a lot of games last year that I watched for Milan that he, like I said, it was just obvious that he couldn't be bothered to be interested in the game. Or, you know, he would be kind of like what's levied at Messi sometimes, where he's anonymous or he disappears for 85 minutes and then he pops up and scores a goal. Well, that was Balotelli last year. He would be anonymous for 80 minutes. Milan would win a penalty kick, and he would take the penalty kick. But as far as his overall contribution to the match, you know, it was pretty meaningless overall. So, again, that's going to be the main thing for Liverpool this year is finding ways to keep Balotelli motivated, because especially in the north where a lot of players tend to think that the cities are kind of boring. A guy like Balotelli, who basically does his antics off the field mainly because he gets bored, it's going to be an interesting thing on how Liverpool handles that.
I had a friend comment to me after this was, you know, in the press for a little bit. He's like, you know what? There's a lot of strip club owners in Liverpool who are probably pretty happy right about now.
Yeah. Yeah, are there any women's prisons in Liverpool?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that too.
Go up again.
So yeah, Mario. So this is to take the view of an MLS bot. This is good for the league. This is good for the EPL, yeah. Right?
Oh yeah, the website. Like yeah, the league site's going to get a lot of hits this year.
So Balotelli. So let's just get back. Now he's an out and out striker, right? So I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think how you could deploy him from the left or the right. I suppose you could. He could do okay in that role. But that's nothing I would envision. And I really think this is a case of Liverpool, after being out of, you know, Europe for so many years now, with this being their first foray back into the Champions League, I think they're really kind of maybe overreacting and just trying to build up that depth that they think they need to be able to compete on two fronts. But I don't know. I mean, bringing in someone as volatile as him, I don't know if that's a good idea. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, because if he start, I mean, if Rodgers buys him in the mind of starting him, which you would imagine a guy like Balotelli is going to want to start, otherwise he wouldn't sign. Like you said, he's going to have to play through the middle, which means they're going to have to bump Sturridge out wide again. And, you know, Sturridge has got a pretty good goal-scoring record no matter where he's played. So, you know, that could be one of those, even though he's happy at Liverpool, when Balotelli comes in and he's being forced to play out wide again, is that going to upset the apple cart kind of thing? Because, yeah, I mean, you did make a good point about maybe they bought it with, you know, with mind or with the mindset of getting depth, because, you know, last year they did so well because they weren't in Europe and they were playing a lot less games. And this year, you know, obviously, being in the Champions League, they will be playing at least six to eight more games. So maybe they did buy it, you know, with depth in mind. But I don't know. A lot of times it's just, again, to keep beating the point, it just seemed like it was a move that was made superfluously and for the name and the hype value rather than, you know, the actual tactical value.
Yeah, because I don't know. You know, Liverpool, they play some good football. And I don't know. I mean, Balotelli is a pretty complete player, but I don't know. I guess I haven't seen him enough since he's left Manchester City, anyway, to know if he really fits their style of play. What do you think about that in terms of, and I guess it depends on what Rodgers is asking him to do.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a big question.
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to play the regular number nine, which is basically what he is, then, you know, having somebody like Coutinho play behind him, he'll do well provided he stays interested in the match. But, you know, I mean, the EPL is definitely becoming more of a tactically astute league, like a lot of, you know, like a lot of managers on the continent. So, you know, it doesn't take very long for managers to kind of catch on and try and mitigate some of these players tactically. And that's where, again, that's always the issue with Balotelli is, you know, if Liverpool, because, you know, the thing Liverpool had going in their favor last year was they were fast starters. Now that everybody's onto that, you know, I expect people to kind of sit back more, especially when they go to Anfield and kind of force Liverpool to work their way around the bus. So if Balotelli starts and he doesn't get a lot of service within that first half hour, are you going to be able to get him back into the match and get him interested? Because like I said, to me, that's going to be the main issue with him other than, you know, where he actually plays, which is obviously going to be number nine, but just getting him interested in those matches. Because, again, no doubting his talent, he's just the type of player that you could – it's just hard to keep him motivated or interested or whatever the right word is.
So, yeah, this is going to be definitely a fascinating storyline to follow throughout these opening months of the league campaign as well as the Champions League, which the Champions League draw will be held next Friday.
Yeah, because even a simple thing like, okay, well, Balotelli likes to take penalties. Okay, well, obviously Gerrard is the main penalty taker at Liverpool. But an ego like Balotelli, how many times can you tell him no? Because you know he's going to want to take penalties at some point. Again, it sounds like an easy thing. Well, the manager just tells him Gerrard's the captain. You got to wait. Like I said, with a guy like Balotelli, is that going to actually get through and sink in his mind, you know? So like I said, just little things like that may you know, lead to upsetting the, you know, the balance of the squad. And maybe I'm wrong, you know, but.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because that was on my list of, you know, Balotelli incidents. Is there was a time where he had to be physically removed from the field by a teammate because he wouldn't allow somebody else to take the penalty.
Yeah, and like I said, that and that's, you know, it's kind of, a lot of these players like that. You know, Zlatan's another one that, you know, the not quite in the selfish, like the selfish way we think of it, but they're selfish in the sense that, well, I'm the penalty take. I don't care if the captain's been here for 15 years. I want to take the penalty because I'm the guy, or, you know, I want to score the goal. So, again, it sounds simplistic and all that, but like I said, a thing like that at a soccer club in Europe can end up upsetting a team, and, you know, in a really competitive league like the EPL, where points are at a premium, especially early in the season, because everybody wants to get off to a good start. Is that going to be the kind of thing that leads to a draw? Because, okay, let's say, you know, there's a little bit of an argument, and Gerrard ends up taking the penalty and they score, but now Balotelli goes into a sulk mode like he did at Milan. And now he's like, okay, well, screw it. Y'all beat, you know, whoever we're playing 10 on 11, you know?
Yeah, all right. So
or forces
let's just make this the last word here from you. Give me your percentage of likelihood that this move comes off, whenever it may end, as successful. And you can define successful as however you want to define it.
I think it'll be a successful move, mainly because he just does have a lot of natural talent. So even if he comes off the bench, he's probably going to be good for 10, you know, double-digit goals. Because at some point he'll have to start, even if he doesn't, just because of the slog through the EPL, especially during around the holiday time where you're playing 4 matches in 10 days. So I think it'll be successful just on talent alone. Whether that pushes Liverpool to the top of the league or anything, you know, I would still have major reservations, because, again, my main point with Liverpool is not their attack, because I think their attack is good enough as is, even losing Suarez. My issue is always with Liverpool is that defense. So, like I said, it'll be successful goal-wise and, you know, and on the face of his play, because I do think he has enough talent that, coupled with the talent that's already with Liverpool, there will be enough to work through his off the field and his personality issues, but whether that leads to a league title or not, I don't think it will. You know, FA Cup maybe, League Cup maybe, but Premier League title, I don't think so, because, again, always comes back to that defense for me for Liverpool.
All right, and we'll leave that there. So there you go. Mario Balotelli coming back to the Prem. Who knows what will happen?
Yeah, because one quick thing on that is,
yeah,
you'll never walk alone. Well, Balotelli does that quite often.
So. Jeez.
Just saying.
All right, I want to get this right this week. Hold on here.
Hey, yo!
There we go.
Just, yeah. We got the drummer who doesn't pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now comes our mystery topic. And this goes right in line with Balotelli, I think. So this is a good transition into a new topic on the pod this week, sir. And this is something that I don't really hear people talk about, but, you know, when the transfer window is open for another week, and you're hearing this a lot with Manchester United now, after they've gotten off to a rough start trying to get to this new system, and you hear it with the striker options at Arsenal, and that is, you know, so-and-so club needs to sign a world-class player at this position, right?
World-class!
World-class. So my question to you, let's have a discussion here. What exactly is world-class? No one ever talks about this. They use it all the time. Oh, this team needs a world-class defender. Oh, they need a world-class midfielder. Oh, they need a world-class striker. Well, what does that mean?
Ooh, yeah, you're asking me or going by, like, the...
I don't know. Yeah, both. Give me
the ethereal Twitter version of world-class.
Yeah, you could give me the media version, your version. I'm interested because this is something that gets talked about so much, but... I don't know, every person, every organization, you know, every fan has their own definition of world class. So please enlighten me.
You know, say my own personal definition, world class is, you know, that's limited to maybe 9 or 10 players on the entire planet. You know, Messi, Ronaldo, those guys. Now, with that said, you can have world-class performances. Doesn't necessarily make you world-class. So, again, you know, we can get into all sorts of stuff with this kind of stuff. You know, like Gareth Bale is a good analogy for that one for me. To me, he's not in the same class as Ronaldo or Messi, even though he scores just as many goals at times and he puts in world-class performances. He's just too much of a speed and a kind of outrun him type of player where he doesn't necessarily dribble through several players often like Messi seems to do. Now, again, maybe that's my bias because I am, when it comes to that world-class discussion, I am a Messi fan over a Ronaldo, or I prefer Messi over Ronaldo. I wouldn't quite call myself a fan, but you know what I mean? So it just means that, you could get into all sorts of philosophical debates when it comes to that, because the way people talk about it on Twitter, it basically means a guy who costs a lot of money that isn't at our club already that I think is going to do better than the guy that my club currently has, whether or not the statistics actually say that or not. So basically just means it's the new way of saying spend some fucking money, basically.
Okay. No, that's a good point. That's a valid viewpoint, yeah. But no, but I will tell you now, I think longevity has a lot to do with world class.
Yes.
So really, Bale's really only had 2 world class seasons, but I do believe that he is a world class player because I believe he will continue at that pace.
Yeah, again, ask in 5 years and I'll probably agree.
Okay, yeah. So I understand that. I mean, you do it for 2 years. Well, anybody could do that. In any sport, you see that flash in the pan type of things. Now, do I think he's that? No. And you agree that you don't think so either. So that's good. But, yeah, so world class, I mean, does that mean what, you're good enough to, you know, make your World Cup squad? I mean, does that make you world class? But I tend to agree with you that world class is just a handful of players. You're talking, 5 to 10 at most.
Yeah, and it's usually guys that do things that other players can't. You know, like when Ronaldinho was in his prime and he would pull off these ridiculous ball tricks in the middle of a game because he was basically bored.
Mm-hmm. And so when you ask for your club to, sign a world-class player, well, you got to ask – well, that's what makes it so fascinating to me, this discussion, because I believe there's only about 5 to 10 on the planet. And those 5 to 10 players really aren't going to move on a regular basis. So you're not going to be able to get world-class talent, in my opinion, based on my definition of world-class. So someone else may just think that, world-class means you're one of the best players in your league or that you're good enough to play for your national team. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, because a lot of the names that's been linked with us and us being Arsenal in the past, like I said, people go on and on about how they're world class. And again, there's some of the better players in Europe that, fans pine for, but I don't know if I would quite call them world class. Like a good example is another young guy is like, Julian Draxler, who is one of the bright young, another one's Mario Götze, too, who are two really young, bright talents in Germany. But I would really hesitate to consider them truly world-class. Now, again, 5-6 years down the road, ask me again, I might change my tune, but they're two examples that I can think of off the top of my head that I see a lot of people on my Arsenal timeline bang on about signing world-class players. And, you know, again, they have a lot of natural talent. I wouldn't quite go as far as to call them world-class at the moment.
Yeah, no, Draxler, definitely not. Now, Goetze, I could maybe make an argument for him, given his emergence at Dortmund, you know, and his performance in the World Cup with Germany. So, yeah, but I had another point. And, of course, I always forget as you are talking. It's, like, unbelievable.
Well, while you're gathering your thoughts, another point I'll make about the world-class thing, because a lot of times this happens, especially in World Cup years, is a guy will – and not saying this happens to Goethe, but sometimes you see this with some of the smaller countries or some of the lesser-known names. They'll have a really good World Cup, and all of a sudden people just assume they're world-class because they have – a great tournament on the world stage, which, you know, this past World Cup, Gervinho had a great World Cup for freak's sake. So, you know, in the past, El Hadji Diouf was another one who had a great World Cup in 2002 or 2006, which, you know, ended up getting him a move to the EPL, and he was pretty average after that. So, like I said, a lot of times it happens in a World Cup year where a guy will have a great tournament. He'll get thrust into that world-class category when he really isn't. But, you know, the perception is that he is because he had a good World Cup tournament while the whole world was watching.
Okay, I remember my point now.
All right, yeah. That usually works when I do another one.
Yes, the definition of world-class to me is a player who you could plop in to any club in any system and they would do extremely well, regardless of what the tactics or who is around him.
Yeah, or he's just a truly unique talent that he can do something that nobody else in the game can, like your Messis and your Ronaldos that just have those unique skill sets that teams, you know, base entire tactical plans around, and they still dribble through the entire team in some games, you know?
Yeah, like Messi today against Elche. I was watching that for the first half. And now he received a great pass from Busquets. But he was, I think he was near the top of the box by himself. And I kid you not, he had six Elche players within 5 yards of him. And he still scored. Now, yes, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, 1-on-6, that's world class.
You know? I mean, that was unbelievable. Now, the pass was great. But still, there were six people, like, surrounding him. You need to look this up if you haven't seen it. It's pretty – I'm like, how do you do that? There's six guys in front of you. Not one of those six decided to, like, close them down or to get in the passing lane. It was nuts.
Well, yeah, because, like, simple things like that – I mean, while you were talking about that, that brought up a point that I'm always complaining about when people talk about how great these players are. If you're a world-class player and you have somebody one-on-one dribbling towards – you know, towards their goal, you should always if you're world class, you should never lay the ball off if you're one on one. Because, like I said, to me, that's one on one. If you're truly world class, you always take that guy on and try and beat him on the dribble. Always make another defender come over. If you lay off, you know, if you lay off in that situation, to me, you're not world class. And I know that's, you know, kind of nitpicking because a lot of players do it. But, like I said, that's what always frustrates me with a lot of Arsenal players, how a lot of my fan brethren go on and on about how great they are, and then they a lot of times they turn down a one-on-one dribbling opportunity to beat their man, or, you know, they put in some crap cross from a worse position than they could be. So, like I said, to me, that's a sign of a world-class player, in like a Messi type, that If you're one-on-one, he's rarely, if ever, going to not try and beat that one-on-one situation.
All right. Well, it seems – see, we've never had this conversation, so it's good. So it seems we have fairly similar viewpoints on what is world-class. And if you out there listening to this have a different viewpoint, please get in touch with us either on the website 2dapdanks.com or at 2dapdanks on Twitter and let us know your opinion. We'd love to hear from you. truly and honestly.
Yeah, because a good example, like Hulk. You remember Hulk 2 summers ago was being talked about as a world-class striker. He's gone off to Russia, and now, you know, nobody even brings his name up anymore.
Yes, and he had a very poor World Cup, too.
But I'm saying he's a good example of supposedly world-class, and yeah, he was a good striker when he was at Porto, but I don't think he was ever truly world-class. So. No.
All right, well, let's talk about someone who I think we all know is world-class.
Yeah, Lagunitas beer?
No, and that is Tim Howard.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Howard this week, U.S. men's national team goalkeeper, has announced that he will be taking a year off from U.S. men's national team duty. So let's close the show talking about Tim Howard and how this will impact, you know, him and the U.S. Program in the short term and the long term, Corey. So first, let's just give me your initial reaction to this news.
At the risk of sounding like a hypocrite when I complained about the same thing when Donovan did it, it doesn't bother me too much. I mean, even though Howard's in good shape, you know, he's nearing the end of his career. Guzan's development arguably could be stagnated. I mean, even though he's playing, you know, regularly at Villa now, at some point, Klinsmann was probably going to have to find ways to work him into the national team anyway. And correct me if I'm wrong, Howard's not the captain, right? Bradley was, right?
Dempsey.
Okay,
Dempsey's
well, yeah.
The captain.
Okay, well, yeah. Main point, Howard's not the captain, right? So correct. Him taking a year off, I don't have an issue with, like, Donovan. Because, again, that's the kind of thing, you have issues, you're the captain, you got to work through them. You can't take time off. Maybe that's a little old school of me. You know, that's not the bright, fuzzy, you know, hugalicious modern era where you give time off to people for whatever. But yeah, so I don't have an issue with it like I did with Donovan, because again, Howard's doing it, not the captain. He's doing it in a position where we're pretty stacked naturally anyway. And frankly, his World Cup performance earned it. And unlike Donovan, he didn't get scared and go home and play in the MLS where it had been easier. He's done it. You know, he's also put in time in one of the toughest leagues in the world for over a decade now. So I don't have an issue with it, because, you know, as much as Donovan fans don't want to hear this, and I consider myself once a Donovan fan, you know, the bottom line is Donovan got scared and went home, you know, 10 years ago. So, like I said, I don't have an issue with Howard doing it because of those reasons.
Okay, we must mention that the main reason Howard has decided to do this is to spend more time with his family, and he has gotten permission from Everton to head to the United States during international breaks. So, and I find it odd, and you know, each family and each person is going to have their own thing, but I was not aware of the fact that Howard's family was not with him in Liverpool.
Yeah, and again, see, that's because I didn't know that either, and that's the kind of thing, when you learn that, I don't have an issue with it, but to drop it on somebody unannounced like Donovan did as the captain, you know, it just comes off as, this will probably give a lot of people the wrong connotation, but it just comes off as a mental weakness to me and a lot of people. And that, you know, if you're going to do it, you got to ask, you got to go through the right channels. You got to have the good reasons other than just, you know, some personal fitness thing, which basically admits to, you know, you're getting too old, unfortunately. So like I said, in Howard's case, he's put in enough time. He's done it overseas in tougher leagues. I don't have an issue with it.
Mm-hmm. And you make good points. A, Howard is not the captain of the side. And yes. Two, and this is something you mentioned to me a couple days ago, he's not taking a year off in the middle of World Cup qualifying campaign.
Yeah. I mean, he's basically doing it in an off cycle. So, you know, he did it the right way. He did it the smart way.
And a third point I can make, and a lot of people who are new to following soccer may not know this, but, you know, Tim Howard actually began his career at Manchester United over in England. And after that failed, after just one single year, if I'm correct. Right? One year?
Yeah, I believe so.
It would have been easy for him to go back to the MLS after that, but he didn't. He stuck it out, found another club, and now he's I could say this without any hesitation, that because I know their fan base and how they love him, he is a Everton legend at this point in time.
Yeah, and I even going further than, you know, the time off, I would not have begrudged him if he would have said, you know what, I just had a great World Cup. I'm going to be 37 soon. I'm actually retiring from the international scene. I wouldn't have had a problem with that at all, especially after the performance he put in, you know, in the World Cup and obviously in the Belgium match. So to ask for time off now, I don't have a problem with it at all, because he's put in his time. He's done it the right way. He didn't shirk, you know, responsibility or harder leagues when it benefited him. So again, I know some people are going to call us hypocrites because of us complaining when Donovan did it, but to me, it's, you know, the two situations are different and should be treated differently. So
Now let's focus now here to the future. Now, obviously, we're in great hands with Brad Guzan, and I could say before this last season, there were a lot of people, and myself included, who actually thought that Guzan was better than Howard. And what turned that for me in my mind is the appointment of Roberto Martinez at Everton. And one of the first things he did was actually bring in an actual backup keeper that, you know, forced Howard to fight for a spot, which was something that he didn't have to do under Boyce, because I don't think they had a proper backup keeper a lot of those times. That, you know, they had, you know, some really old guy who was washed up or some youth kid behind him. And they brought in Robles from Spain, from Atletico. And I think that kind of kick-started Howard, because for a while there, he was making a lot of mental mistakes. And Guzan was, you know, just standing on his head with a poor Aston Villa defense in front of him. And remember that Guzan was in the nets, in the goals, when Howard was hurt, for our only, you know, positive result against Mexico in the Azteca, in a competitive match, that is.
Yeah, and like I was saying before, that's another reason why I definitely don't have an issue with it, because we're generally pretty blessed, or I guess lucky for the religionists that, or for the people who don't like religion using the term blessed. But yeah, we're pretty lucky generally between the sticks, and we're usually pretty deep at that position. So that's another big reason why I don't have a problem with this. Because as you said, there were many occasions about, I think it was 3 or 4 seasons ago, where, like you said, I'd be watching an Everton match and Howard he wasn't bad. He just wasn't playing nearly as good as you knew he could. And like you said, he'd make a few mental errors here and there, which granted all keepers do. And that's one of the hard parts about playing keeper at a club that is generally successful, which sometimes Everton wasn't, but sometimes Everton was. But when you're a keeper on a team that's successful, sometimes you can lack mental focus or lose your focus in a match because you just don't have a lot to do. And I think that kind of happened with Howard at times. So like you said, I think Martinez bringing in Robles, which is also the trend around the league now, is to bring in instead of a 1 and a 2, or, you know, instead of an outright 1 and 2 keeper, to bring in a 1A and a 1B type of keeper. And that way you can put, you know, they can push each other and you just play who's the better keeper. You know, that arguably extended Howard's international, well, maybe not his career, but his international form, or, you know, his top form, an extra couple of years.
Yeah, and, you know, this retirement for a year, or this, not retirement, but this break for a year may not even matter all that much, because, you know, 4 years from now is a long time, and who knows in what shape he'll be. Goalkeepers can play, you know, at a pretty high level, you know, late into their 30s, even into their lower 40s, as we have seen. But when they go, they usually go, like, you know, pretty quick and disastrously. So it's hard to say how he'll age, but we're in good hands with Guzan. So he'll be presumably taking his position in between the sticks for next summer's Gold Cup, which is important for us. And that'll allow us to bring in and maybe groom a number two who would be heir to the throne when Guzan goes in a few years, which would most likely be, you know, Bill Hamid and Sean Johnson are the ones who have been in the U.S. camp the most often under Klinsmann. But as we said, you never know. We always have good keepers, and there may be someone who creeps up on our radar. I know the MLS has a lot of good American keepers who, you know, if given the opportunity, could go to a bigger club and probably do pretty well.
Yeah, and to keep beating the dead point, our depth of talent at keeper is always is pretty deep. So, you know, him leaving, does I have no concerns there, because Guzan's arguably I don't think he's in the same class as Howard. Now, granted, I will freely admit, you know, I've watched Howard his entire career in the EPL, so I'm probably a little biased there. You know, Guzan is arguably maybe a better shot stopper, but an overall keeper, I don't think he's close to Howard, at least in terms of what Howard has done over his career. But as you said, it's like most athletes, you can be fine one day, but when the body goes, it tends to go quickly, and it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, in an injury sort of fashion or in a bad sort of way, but just in a top level sort of way. So yeah, not sure what else to say other than, again, I'm pretty I have no concerns over our depth. So
okay, well, enjoy your year off, Tim Howard from US play, and Brad Guzan will take up excuse me, jeez, he's coughing. Yeah. That's the first time ever.
Yeah,
we don't have a button for that. So it'll be interesting to see who Klinsmann calls in, because we have games coming up here soon. Remember, where the U.S. will be taking on the Czech Republic in Prague in early September. So it'll be very interesting to see who gets called into camp as the goalkeepers.
Because what, there's usually three or four?
Usually three. So I'd imagine Guzan and then maybe Hamid and Johnson. But, you know, maybe there's a European-based guy gets called in. I know there's some, you know, floating around in Germany, some American keepers and Scandinavian leagues. So it'll be interesting. We'll see what Klinsmann does.
Yeah, what's that? I can't think of the guy's name. But, yeah, whatever happened to that guy that – yeah, the guy that was playing in Norway, I think. Don't worry about it. I can't.
There was Steve Clark. That's who I think you're talking about.
Is that who it was? I thought it was.
Maybe not. Yeah.
Anyway, well,
Steve Clark is in the MLS now.
Okay. Yeah, there was somebody that was playing in Norway for several years. That.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. All right. So that is going to wrap up the show for this week. And sir, we have brought back the outro.
Yeah.
And so if anybody who grew up, you know, in the 80s and liked them some video games, they'll know our outro.
Yeah.
In honor of one Balotelli, let's crank up the theme. The Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. Man, lost a lot of quarters playing that game.
Oh, you played it with machines that took quarters?
Yeah, it actually came from Donkey Kong. People forget that Mario Brothers originated in Donkey Kong.
Well, I know that, but I'm talking about Super Mario Brothers on the original Nintendo system.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just getting it back further.
All right. So there we go. All right, we got to get going. Thank you for listening to the Two Daft Yanks podcast. We will catch you next week.
Ivar, baby!